I'm Dan Rodericks, and this is Midday. Today, a look at the state of downtown Baltimore. How is it changing? And what will the area look like 5 years from now? Will more 20 and 30-somethings and empty nesters be drawn to city life? Kirby Fowler, president of the Downtown Partnership, breaks down a new report on trends in population, housing, development, entertainment, and retail sales. But first, Carl Cannon, Washington Bureau Chief for Real Clear Politics, joins us. We'll talk about Martin O'Malley's recent jabs at Hillary Clinton and Jeb Bush and his populist pitch in New Hampshire as the campaign for president takes shape. That's next on Midday after the news from NPR. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to Midday. Dan Rodericks here. Thanks again for joining us and making Midday part of your day on WYPR Baltimore, WYPF Frederick and Hagerstown, Western Maryland, WYPO Ocean City, and the Eastern Shore of Maryland, and streaming to you live online through WYPR.org. We thank you for making Midday part of your day. It's a two-hour show. In the second hour today, a real treat. Dr. Irvin Yalom, Y-A-L-O-M, very well known to people in the fields of psychiatry, psychology, social work, known to his patients as Irv Yalom. He's 83 years old now. He's considered the grand old man of psychiatry. A generation or two of therapists have drawn a great deal of wisdom from his books on the practice of psychotherapy. He'll be our guest in the second hour of the show today. He's a bit of a philosopher, too, an existential psychiatrist, Irv Yalom. He'll be joining us for conversation, telling us what he's learned about life from his patients over the years, what he has learned as a therapist from his patients over many years of practice. That's in the second hour of our show today. And a note about tomorrow's program, a look at the spring housing market in this hour tomorrow. In the noon hour, Jody Landers will be joining us, widely respected expert on trends in housing in the Baltimore region. And also tomorrow, another psychiatrist joining us, Dr. Mark Comrade, who's based here in Baltimore. He'll be talking about mental illness and the working life, entering a debate in the wake of the German Wings disaster about whether people with psychological disorders, including depression, should be precluded from certain occupations. That's in tomorrow's show. Later in this hour, Kirby Fowler will be joining us, president of the Downtown Partnership, to talk about downtown life, trends in housing and development and population, what's going on in downtown Baltimore. He'll be with us in just a few minutes. I just wanted to note early in the show, we were supposed to have Carl Cannon joining us, and I hope we still might. I don't know if this is going to happen. Unfortunately, there's been a miscommunication. Carl Cannon is Washington Bureau Chief of Real Clear Politics and had agreed to join us to talk about Martin O'Malley, the former governor of Maryland, making some news this week as he continues to test the waters for a presidential run. He was lauded as being a feisty contender, although in an uphill battle against the likely candidate, Democrat Hillary Clinton, who's expected to announce soon whether she's running for president. And on the Republican side, Jeb Bush. Let's listen now to what Martin O'Malley had to say as he stepped onto the big stage, ABC's This Week with George Stephanopoulos.
Back in 2007, you were one of Hillary Clinton's earliest supporters. You were chair of her Maryland campaign. You called her the experienced leader America needs. And you added this. You said that no one is better equipped to repair America's alliances abroad and address the urgent needs of our communities at home. No one is better equipped. Is that still true today?
Well, I certainly believed that for those times that she would be the best choice for us as a country.
For those times?
For those times.
Not now?
I believe that there are new perspectives that are needed in order for us to solve the problems that we face as Americans and also the problems that we face as people on this planet. And I believe that new perspective and new leadership is needed. But more important than that, George, the two phrases I'm struck with all over the country are the phrases that people come up and say to me in every state, which is, We need people who know how to get things done, and we need new leadership.
What I'm struck
and that's
by is
what
it
I'm
sounds
hearing.
Like you just announced for president right here. You said that we need new perspectives, new leadership. You're ready to challenge her, aren't you?
Well, I think that our country always benefits from new leadership and new perspectives. I mean, let's be honest here. The presidency of the United States is not some crown to be passed between two families. It is an awesome and sacred trust that to be earned and exercised on behalf of the American people.
Those two families, Bush and Clinton?
Well, right now, George, you know, any two families. But look, in order for us to make an economy again where people can work hard and get ahead, we need a president who is on our side, a president who's willing to take on powerful, wealthy, special interests in order to restore that sort of American economy where wherever you start on the earning spectrum, you can get ahead through your hard work. That's not the economy we have today. 12 years in a row of wages declining, and it doesn't have to be this way.
And Hillary Clinton's not the candidate to take on those powerful special interests?
Well, I don't know. I don't know where she stands. Will she represent a break with the failed policies of the past? Well, I don't know.
Failed policies of the past, something a phrase Ronald Reagan used to use. Anyway, all very interesting here. Chris Saliza in the Washington Post wondering just how far O'Malley is willing to go in criticism of Mrs. Clinton. You know, that was a jab and a poke. It wasn't really a body punch, what he said about Mrs. Clinton and implied about Jeb Bush as well. Does O'Malley retreat into talking generically about why he might be a better choice than the other Democratic alternatives? Or does he lean into his Clinton criticism, endangering maybe his chance at a post in the Clinton cabinet, but making himself a far more relevant force in the coming primary fight? Question from The Fix, Chris Saliza in The Washington Post. O'Malley was in New Hampshire. This is back in New Hampshire last night, telling young Democrats there that politics is not the exclusive domain of the ultra-wealthy, taking on embracing the populist message that people have been hearing from Elizabeth Warren, the senator from Massachusetts, who made clear that she's not very, very clear that she's not running for president. Here's a quote from O'Malley. There is no reason that billionaires should crowd of us from ownership of our democracy. That must be a misprint in the Post. There is no reason that billionaires should crowd, I don't know what that means, from ownership of our democracy. We need everybody's help because the question on the table is this. As you grow up and you raise your children here in the United States of America, do you want our country to be a country where only the rich can get ahead? Or do you want it to be a country where all of us can get ahead? Populist message from Martin O'Malley. Not quite the kind of rhetoric we heard when he was governor of Maryland. You're welcome to make comments about this during the show. I'll be glad to read them. Our email address, midday@wypr.org. I'm sorry to say that Carl Cannon, Washington Bureau Chief of Real Clear Politics, won't be able to join us in this hour, but we'll try to get him on the show another day because there's a lot to talk about here as O'Malley continues this uphill I guess he's going to continue. He hasn't officially announced yet, but it sure looks like he's going to. We'll take a break here on Midday. When we come back, Kirby Fowler will be joining us from the Downtown Partnership with his own version of the State of the City address. State of the City report from Kirby Fowler in just a minute here on Midday. Welcome back to Midday. Our phone number here is 410-662-8780. Kirby Fowler joining us now. And Kirby, nice to see you again.
Nice to be back. Thank you, Dan.
Kirby Fowler is president of the Downtown Partnership of Baltimore. And tomorrow, April 2nd, right, you have your annual
State of Downtown Breakfast. Right.
We thought we'd have you in today to talk about the state of downtown. It's certainly interesting, the population trends, the real estate development in downtown Baltimore. So we're going to get into that in a minute. The reason I put out the phone number is because I'm curious about people who of a certain age, particularly people in their 20s and 30s, and older people who are empty nesters. These are the groups that we think of nowadays or talk about nowadays in terms of moving downtown, living closer to the waterfront, living somewhere in downtown Baltimore. Maybe you've lived in the suburbs a long time. Maybe you grew up in the suburbs, and that doesn't appeal to you as much as living in the city. You're thinking about moving into the city, or you did it in the past year. the last year or two. We'd like to hear about your experiences, your thoughts, your observations. If you have time to call us, 410-662-8780. So, Kirby, where do we begin? We begin with population. Why don't we start with that? Because this track that you look at, which is, the center, the epicenter of your chart mm-hmm. is Pratt and Light, right?
Correct.
And the radius for that you talk about, the geographic radius is what?
1 mile.
Okay.
Radius.
1 mile from there.
Yes.
Okay. So is that so? All of our discussion today is about that.
Yes.
Big circle in downtown Baltimore.
Yes. And at some point, we might drill into where the skyscrapers are in the census tract 401. But for the most part, we'll talk about the 1 mile radius, which, when you think about it, is 2 miles from end to end if you did a straight diameter walk. And that's a good size for a downtown. And it's a good way to compare ourselves to the other downtowns throughout the country.
Okay. And you mentioned census tract 401. Why don't we save that and tell people about that specifically a little bit later?
Sure.
Because that's interesting in and of itself. Okay, first of all, population. I see that generally the city had a population adjustment through this, a look at the Census Bureau estimates versus real numbers.
Sure. With regard to the city, the recent estimate said that there's a loss of 600 people from the city, which is really a rounding error, if anything. But with regard to downtown and the 1 mile radius, we saw, ironically, a 600 person increase.
Did you?
Yes.
In a year?
In a year.
In
yeah.
one
we,
year.
We've seen steady growth. Within the 1 mile radius, there's 41,600 people, according to this national database we've used for the past 10 years called Claritas.
Claritas?
Claritas, yeah, it's a national database.
How does that compare to Washington, D.C.?
Well, D.C. just beat us. We were eighth in the country for many years, and D.C. just passed us. They are now eighth in the country. We're ninth in the country. It's only a few hundred people, I think, separate us. But D.C., with all the development we saw going on there,
yeah.
it was bound to happen.
Okay. But that's pretty good, though. We're ninth in the country in downtown population.
Right.
1 mile radius from the, I don't know how, each city arrives at their own epicenter, I guess.
Well,
right?
Actually, we chose it, and we based it upon the most dense area, where the most shopping is, the most tourism, where the most mixed use is.
Okay. And that, so you said 41,600.
Yes.
How long have you been president of the downtown partnership?
11 years
now.
So
how far have we come in 11 years, can you say?
Well, I could say since 2007. That's when we started to really embrace the 1 mile radius. And at that point, there was 38,000 residents. And so now up to 41,600. We saw a 6% increase in total population between actually 2000 and 2010. The census is really the best source of information, but that's only every 10 years for the most part. But we saw a 6% increase in that 1 mile radius during those 10 years.
Okay. Question, what's driving it?
I think it's a combination of things. Many people have been working for years to bring back this 1 mile radius area, whether you start off with the dollar homes or the Inner Harbor or renovating these historic buildings or supporting Harbor East, all those things are starting to come together. I remember when I moved here in 1991, I lived in Federal Hill. I walked over to Fells Point, and it felt like it was a 4-hour walk because there didn't seem to be much in between the two. Now, it's amazing how it's all relative. You can walk that area, and there's so much to engage in. It feels like a 20-minute walk. So we're filling in those pieces. So there's a better quality of life. The job numbers improve, which I can talk about in a moment. But you know, it builds upon itself. I really feel like we've hit a tipping point. Yeah, we might have drops here and there, but for the most part, we continue to see steady growth.
Now, you heard me throw out to our listeners a request for folks to call in with comment, especially if you're in the 20s, your 30s,
yes.
or you're older, an empty nester, who's thought about giving up a house to move to maybe a waterfront place or someplace simpler, a row house even. And that's what we're talking about. Is that the trend?
Those are the main trends. We did see a 12% increase in families in the 1 mile radius over a 10-year period. But still, when you look at the median age, it's about 31 years old. And if you look at the gender, it's about 44% female, 56% male. So you see there's a relatively decent balance there. But 31 years old is the median age. And so we're hoping to see more empty nesters move in. We've seen that trend anecdotally, or particularly around the waterfront. Empty nesters, they have a little more disposable income.
Mm-hmm.
They don't want to rake the leaves off their lawn anymore or shovel snow. So they'll go around the waterfront if they can. But we're seeing younger people move into some more of the historic renovations.
410-662-8780 is our number here. Kirby Fowler with us, president of the Downtown Partnership, taking a look at Baltimore's downtown. By the way, just to go back to your chart for a moment, the 1 mile radius from Pratt and Light. Yeah. So, tell me where does that take us? Okay. West, north, east, and south. You mind?
Sure.
I think I can estimate that, but I like to know actually what it is.
Great. So I'll try to follow your order. But the west side is Poppleton, past the biopark.
Right.
The north side is in Mount Vernon, Eager Street.
Okay.
Up near the City Cafe.
Right.
Over on the east side, it'd be Broadway. And then
Broadway Hopkins, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
okay. And then down in the south, it'd be Ford Avenue. So we have a decent mix of row homes, but also it's the resurgence of the skyscraper living. That's an interesting trend.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about that. Well, I was going to go to jobs next, but that's okay. Let's go to these conversions of office buildings to apartments, which continues. The latest one, I think, was on, just announced a couple of weeks ago, on Mulberry Street.
Yes.
Pretty old office building. I think that was a school once upon a time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We're seeing this trend really in the Area 401, the census tract that we were talking about.
Okay. Let's tell people what that
Sorry.
Is then.
That's
even a more specific track.
But it's the most unusual and interesting trend. So it's basically from Pratt Street to Franklin Street, Packer Street to President Street. So if people ever talk about the historic core of downtown, that's what we're talking about.
Okay.
The older office buildings, some of the newer office buildings. But that's where we have the most opportunity for conversions. And whenever a building has been renovated recently, it's been filling up, which is a fantastic trend.
And these were office buildings that, not that long ago, the Downtown Partnership was saying, hey, you know, they're empty. What are we going to do?
Yeah.
And then you saw developers come in and say, all right, I'll tell you what we're going to do. We're going to turn them into apartments.
Right. Well, we worked very hard with the mayor's office and Baltimore Development Corporation to really address this. 23 properties were identified 4 years ago by us as underutilized, obsolete office buildings. And 15 of them already have plans in place or have opened in the last 4 years. So 15 out of 23 have already been acted upon.
Wow.
So we're seeing these spaces filled. It's not just residential. Some are hotels. Some are retail. But the predominant trend is residential.
10 Light Street.
10 Light Street.
They have the correct address, don't they? It's a wonderful building. Art Deco building that used to be the Maryland National Bank building way back when and has the gilded crown at the top. That's still undergoing work, right? It isn't open yet.
That's correct. Although I believe in June, it'll be open. It's very close. But we had this problem trying to convince people that these things were happening because it happened in renovated buildings and the construction happened inside buildings.
Mm-hmm.
10 Light has a construction elevator on the outside. It's very easy to see the change there. But those are going to be great apartments. I think empty nesters will go there because of the iconic nature of the building.
Let's talk about jobs, because you mentioned that. That's part of your report here. We have employment now in the, not just Census Tract 401, but the larger area, the one-mile radius of downtown. 124,000 jobs that you have identified?
Correct, yes. And if we go back again to 2007, we're about 114,000. And we dropped, of course, during the recession, and we've been building back up since then. But it ranks us 12th in the country in terms of employment, which, again, most people don't think of that. This is why we did the comparison, because when you're just sitting in isolation, you think, oh, the recession took a lot of our jobs. But where we stand with regard to the rest of the country, Denver and Dallas are the two cities that are closest to us in terms of employment. Those are great cities and great downtowns. So we should really celebrate that fact.
One of them's in Texas.
Yes. And actually, when you speak about Texas, our residential numbers are better than Houston's downtown.
410-662-8780. That's pretty good. And do you see more jobs in the pipeline, like in the next year or two, that are coming?
Well, this past year was great in terms of that kind of attraction of business, particularly from the region, with Pandora moving in, another company from Hanover, Maryland, bringing 70 jobs into downtown, and MAFE coming from Annapolis. We didn't have this on our radar a couple of years ago, and people have been rediscovering downtown. So we hope that continues. But there's 5,000 employers in this 1 mile radius. We are not just dependent on the big companies. These smaller businesses are critical to us. And if a small IT firm, a small architecture firm, adds 2 or 3 employees, ultimately, you'll have net job growth.
Hmm. So most of the people who are living downtown are working somewhere downtown or in the city, or are they driving out of the city for a job in Harford County?
Both.
Both.
have about 30% of our downtown residents work in downtown. about 30%, which actually ranks us in the top 20% of all cities. There's a recent study done on that. So very strong live-work numbers. But we have people choosing to live here first and work elsewhere. About 6% of our population goes to D.C. every day to work, or they might be, and there's other percentages that go to Columbia or Towson, et cetera. But people are choosing to live in downtown first and finding jobs second. That's just not a downtown Baltimore trend. Millennials, as a generation, have been adopting that strategy.
What about crime? Let's talk about this for a minute, because if there's anything that can send people away, it's that.
Right.
And that's, you know, Baltimore's rap, its reputation, even though the numbers have been coming down in recent years, a lot of people still don't believe it. Perception is everything, as the commissioner says, former commissioner says, the mayor says. So how does downtown look when it comes to that?
Well, you got to keep your eye on the ball at all times. We have our downtown Baltimore guides who have a safety presence, but more so a hospitality presence. But the numbers have been going down. We saw a 40% decrease across the board over the past 10 years with regard to crimes.
In that circle.
In that circle, yes, mm-hmm. That's right. However, I've struggled with this because I'm always asked by reporters or others to talk about these issues. And it took me a long time to figure out. The best response that I've been able to find is, look at who's staying in these apartment buildings. They have one-year leases, and yet they continue to stay year to year, and we see the numbers increasing. If crime are really that bad, as some people may perceive downtown, then why would those people be flocking out of these apartment buildings instead of renewing their leases every year? Mm-hmm. I think that's been the only really concrete way I can respond to it, because otherwise it's about perception.
Let's go to the phone lines to take some calls for Kirby Fowler while he's our guest here on the Midday Show, president of the Downtown Partnership, who's giving us a preview of the report he'll deliver tomorrow to the State of Downtown breakfast. Carolyn calling from Phoenix in Baltimore County. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I love your show.
Oh, I'm glad you do. Thank you.
I just wanted to say that I am a recent graduate. I lived in Charles Village for the last year of college, just recently moved back in with my mother. And while I absolutely love the opportunity to be in an urban area and, you know, have all the diversity and see the art and the people, one of my biggest concerns and still is the amount of gentrification that's happening because we're renovating all of these buildings and pushing the poverty, pushing the crime into smaller pockets. And I guess my question is rent control a possibility ever? Like, can we get these impoverished areas, can we get millennials in there and to trying to build up the neighborhood without having to push out these people that are already living there?
Excuse me, Carolyn, I'm just curious, is there a particular part of the city where you've noticed this that troubles you?
I feel like one of the biggest, I think it's easiest to see in Mount Vernon and the Sebastopol neighborhood next door, like just on the other side of 83 South.
Mm-hmm.
You can see, like, you can literally walk from one neighborhood to the other within 5 minutes, and you have Mount Vernon, a beautiful historic neighborhood with yuppies and guppies, and then you have abandoned buildings, abandoned playgrounds with smashed out car windows on the ground.
But I don't see that as gentrification. I see that as the sort of patchwork of Baltimore, poverty and affluence, poverty and some middle class, and you know, you drive two blocks here, three blocks there, and you see that. But gentrification to me is that I have a different definition of it than you do. That it would be areas where people move into a distressed area where a lot of people are renters, buy properties, improve them, and soon the whole block is improving, and soon the whole block has changed. The population of that block has changed. That,
yeah.
Carol, and that's what I see as gentrification. So I was wondering where you see it. Kirby, I'm glad you brought this up. This is a
in my past,
the G word is a tough word.
Sure, in my past, I worked on the Station North neighborhood, the Arts District.
Right near here.
Right near here. And I remember the Urban Land Institute came in, and they talked about gentrification without displacement. Gentrification can be a good word. It's about bringing back buildings, bringing back neighborhoods. However, you don't want to displace people who are currently there. So there's that challenge. With regard to Mount Vernon and downtown, which, yeah, of course, I have a little more experience with, first of all, people should understand 50% of the people in the 1 mile radius identify themselves as minorities. 50%. So, yes, I think the incomes are starting to go up a little bit. So we had to make sure that there is some subsidized housing available. And there is when you look through the 1 mile radius.
Affordable housing.
Affordable housing, exactly. You need that. And we've got plenty of people who are living 2 to 3 per unit just to be able to afford the units. And so we have to watch that. But with regard to the Mount Vernon divide between 83 dividing Mount Vernon from some other neighborhoods, yeah, those neighborhoods have been desolate for decades, and thankfully Mount Vernon's filling in some of the spaces. But I haven't seen a trend where Mount Vernon homes have been forcing people into the other neighborhoods.
You're talking about on the east side of the expressway.
That's right. That's right.
Like Preston Street, over that way.
We need to do work over there. The Old Town Mall needs to come back, Jonestown, et cetera.
Yeah. But there's finally a plan for Old Town.
That's right.
It's forming. It's coming.
Yes. But if you look at farther down, right at President Street, there was the Hope 6 program that Bill Clinton and Kurt Schmoke put into effect that actually provided mixed income housing. And I'd like to see more of that happening to deal with this. But we have to separate out the issues. Gentrification in and of itself could be about improving a neighborhood. We have to make sure that it's just not an easy way to say yuppies are taking over.
I'm glad, Carolyn, and you mentioned the Jones Falls Expressway again, because that particular section I wish would come down. I wish there was a plan that was put out here a few years ago to just drop the thing somewhere after Penn Station, someplace around there, mm-hmm. Mount Royal, and then make it a grand boulevard. Make it a boulevard, boulevard, you know, a great French word.
Right.
It's gives a wonderful feeling of, you know, maybe three lanes of traffic, a bicycle lane, a big open sidewalks for people to walk on, trees, and then better connect the East Baltimore, immediate East Baltimore there, with the downtown, with Mount Vernon and the rest of downtown. So someday. They've done that in a couple of cities, taking down these federal expressways that came in the 60s and 70s.
I saw there's a $40 million price tag for that.
For doing what I just described?
Yes, that's what I heard.
My grand boulevard?
Yes.
$40
million? Yeah.
Well, that's not bad. Nice, wait a minute. When we're talking about the light rail, which is 1 point something billion, right?
Good point, yeah.
Let's take a call from Maggie in West Baltimore. Hi, Maggie.
Hi. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
I just heard your guest talk about the demographics being maybe 50-50 and that people identify themselves as minorities.
Mm.
I happen to question that, and I would love to know what data he uses.
Okay.
Okay. I would suggest check out the U.S. Census, which is the best authority.
If you could be more specific, because I've been doing a lot of research. I happen to live in Harlem Park,
mm-hmm.
and I'm one of the groups of black people, actually, who black person who is being pushed out of the area and looking to live better, like most people do. And I don't find an entrance for that to happen. So the U.S. Census is difficult to tease out. So if you could refer me to something, I'm happy to take the answer offline.
Okay. Maggie, hold on a minute. Before you go, I wanted to ask you a question.
Yeah.
I'm gonna guess that you use the community survey from the U.S. Census, the U.S. Census Bureau's community survey, to get really specific about census
community
tracts.
Survey?
Yeah,
okay, let's do it right now.
Yeah, but don't do it while we're on the air with me. I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Now you said you're in Harlem Park, but you're being pushed out.
Well, I'm not. Well, this is where I live. I would like to live in the area that was just described. I wouldn't be able to, and in terms of because of the demographics that are coming in, the job availability, and all the other indicators for what's trending. But the area that I'm keeping my eye on is the one that I'm sure you're familiar with, is the Upton area, which just has been tagged as the next area for gentrification takeover.
Hmm.
And that way, I just kind of like to keep an eye on what's being done around my community.
Mm-hmm.
So that we, yeah.
But you don't immediately feel like you're being pushed out of Harlem Park.
Well, no, not right now. No one wants Harlem Park.
But you're thinking about if you moved up to Upton, would you be able to afford Upton?
Exactly. I can't afford, because I happen to be one of those people who, an educated black person who has a very difficult time accessing the good life. And I'm not the only one who lives in West Baltimore who has this status.
Mm-hmm.
So while I'm listening and seeing all the great things that are going on in this city, I want to be a part of that process. But there doesn't seem to be a real way to do that. So when I listen to conversations like you're having today, I'm thinking, they're not talking about me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see so many eligible, healthy black men on the streets just standing around doing nothing, and I'm sure they would like to be a part of their city as well. So, as you can tell,
so more jobs is what you're talking about.
Not just jobs, because as you know, jobs don't create wealth. That's not what wealth means. It means access to people like you and to your guests, who can make connections, who would be open to collaborating with some other group, and not just looking at themselves. I mean, there was a recent study that showed silos still are very prominent among collaborative relationships, no matter what the data supposedly shows. We're still drawn to those who are like ourselves, and that's just only natural. But to start to break that down, there has to be a process, and there has to be a conversation by which that can happen.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And I'm just looking to be a part of it.
Thank you, Maggie. Thank you very much. Going back to the racial breakdown, that is interesting, and specifically Census Tract 401. I think we talked about this once.
Right, absolutely. So it works out both for the one-mile radius as well as Census Tract 401. It's about 50%.
It's about 50%.
In each case. And interestingly, in the skyscraper area of 401, there's been a heavy increase in people identifying themselves of Asian background. We have many people who are actually from the country of India who've moved in for jobs. We have some people of Arab background who've been moving in as well. So there's this melting pot aspect that people don't see. There's a lot of assumptions out there what's happening, but mm-hmm. we use the census tract numbers, and that's where we're finding this data from.
We need to take a break, and we'll come back and talk some more with Kirby Fowler from the Downtown Partnership about the state of downtown Baltimore. You're welcome to call us and join this conversation with comments or questions, especially if you've moved into downtown the last couple of years or if you've tried to and you found it unaffordable. 410-662-8780 is our number. We really like to hear from you, especially if you're in your 20s or your 30s, or maybe you're an older person who decided, I'm giving up the backyard and the raking leaves and all that, I'm selling my house and moving downtown and enjoying the waterfront. We'd like to hear from you as well. Our midday email address, midday@wypr.org. And welcome back to Midday. Dan Roderick's here with Kirby Fowler, president of the Downtown Partnership. We talked about jobs. We talked about houses. How about retail and entertainment? Anything to say about that? I was at a little restaurant up on Charles Street, I don't know, the 500 block, 400 block, on a Saturday, and it was kind of slow, mm-hmm. and the owner said he decided to open up on Saturday just to see how it would work out. It was a little slow on the weekends, but he said during the week his business was good. Mm-hmm. Anyway, generally speaking, restaurants, retail, and downtown.
Sure. Yeah, let's break it down that way. On the restaurant side, in terms of the food, there's certainly been a great improvement over the past couple decades in the amount of restaurants that have come online. You see it across the board. It actually led us to create Restaurant Week along with Visit to Baltimore, and so we do that twice a year. But we get more and more restaurants, at least 100 restaurants sign up for that. So we're seeing in the food category lots of growth. You know, restaurants come and go. You'll see that in Manhattan, Philadelphia here. But you'll see like Shake Shack opening on Pratt Street, which, you know, even though it's a burger joint, it is so popular, it gets a lot of buzz.
Have you been there?
I have.
What's with the line? People waiting in line for Shake Shack?
Well, they also serve beer.
So it's not just shakes.
But okay. No, the burgers are delicious.
Okay.
Really good.
Anyway.
But in terms of food, we're doing well. I would love to see more goods retail. We have it on the periphery a bit. We have a Target at Mandama Mall. You've got a Target in Kent Crossing. You got Harris Teeter for groceries and Whole Foods. But you really don't have lots of goods retailers in the middle of downtown. So if you're a downtown resident, you don't have a car. You have to travel via circulator, Uber.
To do your grocery shopping.
To do your grocery shopping.
Yeah.
That's tough.
You can go to Lexington Market, but for a supermarket, there was a supermarket at Charles and Saratoga. Am I right? Saratoga.
Yes.
And that space is still empty now, isn't it?
Yes, but without disclosing too much, I believe there's progress on the site.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, that's good to hear. Okay, and so generally, what would your report say about retail?
Retail, the buying power continues to improve for downtown, but we still don't have the retail that I would like. What downtowns can do, they get specialty retail and food. The commodities retail, it's harder to attract that. But we need bigger spaces to accommodate that retail. But that's probably the weakest segment of what we have going on.
Let's take a couple more calls here from our listeners. James in Falston, ready to go. Here's Kirby Fowler for you. Hi.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to ask a question, but I had a comment based on the retail thing you were just talking about. A little anecdote. I was up in Towson years ago. I was in graduate school, and I wanted to get a seersucker suit for a wedding. I couldn't afford a new one, so by chance I went into a used clothing store, and I found one, I think, for $30 that I still wear.
Good for you.
It took so long, though, I was running out of time, and I had to go home where I lived in the city and eat lunch, and the wedding was that evening. So I said, well, I'll just buy a shirt in the city. I had no idea where to go, so I ended up going to some swanky clothing place in the heart of Mount Vernon on Charles Street, and the only shirt and tie they had that matched ended up costing $80. So I completely lost all of my savings, and I thought, this sucks. There's no place to buy clothes here in Baltimore City.
But how long, James, how long ago was this?
That was a long time ago, yeah, man. Yeah. That was, 15 years ago.
Okay. Well, so, let's talk about, do you have a question for Kirby about 2015, where we are today?
Yeah, you know, I was wondering about, I've always wondered with development spreading in the city, it seems to me, and I lived in the city for a long time, that MLK Boulevard has, well, it has a great function for directing traffic, sort of acts as a wall, keeping the development from the downtown and the gentrification and all the economic stuff from filling west as it has tended to fill east. What is there any solution to that? I mean, where we can still have the traffic benefits of a huge boulevard, but somehow open up and let the development flow? And I'll take my answer off there.
It could, you could really do something beautiful there. You could make it, first of all, more visually beautiful. There are things you could do to open it up. And the biopark has started to move west, right?
Oh, absolutely. But these multi-lane roads are tough generally, and you do have to feed traffic in and out. However, as you pointed out, the biopark has really, you've jumped over Martin Luther King to expand some of the development, and there's been lots of growth there. And Poppleton is starting to benefit from that, too. It's been a little slow on the neighborhood side, but in terms of what the University of Maryland, Baltimore, is doing there, it's been phenomenal. But also Heritage Crossing was a great project that occurred about 10, 15 years ago, which was a mixed-income project that also tried to expand beyond. But these physical barriers, and from an urban design standpoint, are tough to overcome. You could make a better boulevard, a better median, but there's a lot of traffic on those streets.
Paul, we'll take your call next. Welcome to Midday. Go right ahead. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
Right.
I have to apologize. I'm in a car, so it might be difficult to hear me. I'm just going to ask the question, then I'll go on mute. What I was curious about is how important is Baltimore as a recreational boating center, and what the report says about that, and what any future plans are to support that.
Okay, well, we did not analyze that, but with regard to, I guess are you referring to canoeing, kayaking, or are you talking
about? I think he means
marinas.
A destination,
I really
right?
Mean marinas. I mean, Chesapeake defines the region so much, and it's a wonderful aesthetic that I think draws people in, and I think if we capitalized on that, it could really make it sort of a larger Annapolis.
Mm-hmm. You're right. A lot of people are drawn to downtown because of the water. There's no doubt about that. And I could tell you the number of times I've walked along the waterfront and these boats are just hanging out in the corner of my eye. But you sense they're there, and it adds this nice feel to it, like a Newport, Rhode Island or something like that. So I think aesthetically it helps, but also people are living on some of these boats as well. So it adds more residents. But you need to have as much activity. When it comes to boating, though, I think the water taxi is our great next frontier. Already the city has some free routes to help with commuting, but I think we could do much, much more in that regard. But it costs money. But we need to move people on the water.
Did you like the looks of the plan that was rolled out for reconfiguring, redeveloping, reworking the Inner Harbor, Harbor Place, and all of it there? McKeldin Fountain over to Rash Field.
The Inner Harbor 2.0 plan, yes.
Sorry, thank you. That's what it is.
That's right, yes. Absolutely. There's parts of it I really like. For several years, the Downtown Partnership has been working on ideas for McKeldin Plaza, McKeldin Square itself, because it's been a barrier. I think it was designed at a point where no one believed that Harbor Place would work. That's why Harbor Place faces the water. They don't face Light Street, or the pavilions don't face Light Street or Pratt Street, but that's about to be changed too. But I think people didn't think it was going to work. And so the McKeldin Fountain is this barrier, and we're working to take that down. So I think a plan to take that down and create a much better open space, there'd be more space for free speech, but also make it easier to use. It's dead for 6 months of the year.
I really like the pedestrian drawbridge.
Oh, yes.
To go from Rash Field near where the Rusty Scupper is over to one of the piers. I think it's not Pier 6, but the one next to it, maybe.
Pier 5, perhaps?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But
anyway, I really like that because of the way it creates this cycle of foot traffic and mm-hmm. bicycle traffic for people to get from one end of the one side of the harbor to the other side, going over the water. I mean, it could be really picturesque.
It'll help retail and restaurants. Imagine how many people start the amphitheater in the Inner Harbor and don't go to Rusty Scupper because they don't know how to get back.
Or any of the places in Federal Hill.
Yeah.
Ryan, an email from Remington. With this one-mile radius, doesn't the population increase of, quote-unquote, downtown depend on the growth of neighborhoods outside of that true core whose boundaries bleed into the radius? So rather than having our traditional core downtown being truly revitalized, we have surrounding neighborhoods grow, and it counts as downtown growth. Would the numbers be as rosy if you only did a half-mile radius? I fear we will continue to build up the harbor east and harbor point of the city rather than growing a community of residents and businesses in the buildings and spaces that made Baltimore great, or making downtown a place that is as welcoming to Baltimore residents and not just tourists. But you're kind of proving that this isn't just for tourists, aren't you? I mean, that's what I'm hearing him say, Ryan. I don't know. Maybe I'm...
Yeah, in fact...
Am I wrong? Is that what you're saying?
I think he's referring about what's going to happen in a census tract like 401, where you have obsolete office buildings. And that's the fastest growing neighborhood in the entire city. And it increased by 130% over the last 10 years. So, yes, the other neighborhoods on the periphery help a lot. But the core is the fastest growing neighborhood, not the waterfront, the core.
Is there any word on a new grocery store coming to Saratoga? And Charles, oh, Keith, I'm sorry. I'm just reading these emails as they hand them to me. I already asked him that question, and you didn't want to let the cat out of the bag, but something is in the work there. He says shopping is very limited if you do not drive or own a car.
I agree.
Yes. Yes. So you don't want to say anything more about that.
Well, I think the importance of the circulator, I think, ties it all together a bit. But we need more retail. There's no question about it.
Now, I don't know if you want to take this question, but it is interesting that it's on someone's mind, and it should be probably. Ileana says, I wouldn't move to the waterfront until I had looked into the implications, including worst-case scenario of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
Has anyone looked into this? Are developers telling potential buyers the truth about sea level rise?
Well, I don't know about that, since I'm not a developer. However, I do know that the planning department is requiring that the new construction that occurs around the waterfront to accommodate a 500-year flood, that's a planning term for one of the worst floods you could possibly have, or a 100-year flood. And so the Shake Shack building in particular had to have some special flood mitigation in order to accommodate that. But with regard to row homes single family owner occupied homes, I don't know what realtors are telling people. The nice thing, Fells Point is a tough area. Federal Hill, I think, will be fine for centuries, hopefully.
Let's go to the west side a little bit and talk about that. We saw plans for redoing Lexington Market, improving Lexington Market finally. But let's talk about the theater district there, the Hippodrome, some missing pieces. There's some good pieces, missing pieces. The Super Block isn't getting on track. So what do you see coming there?
Well, I'd like to go back 11 years ago. There was no Hippodrome. There was no Everyman Theater. There was no Able, which is an apartment building. There was no Camden Courts, which is another residential building. There mm-hmm. was no Atrium, another residential building. So things have come along, but we had hoped that it would have exploded, and it hadn't. But
yeah,
probably
there's pieces.
The recession. There's pieces.
There's some nice pieces. The BGE building's another one.
Absolutely.
Lexington Street.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's pieces filling it, but I think the Brummo Arts District concept will help. Already artists are rediscovering the area, so I think artists will help really establish a foothold for some cultural activities in the district. But with regard to the city-owned properties, which I think you're referring to, yes, there's been some litigation. At least people are fighting over who gets the property as to like who doesn't get the property.
Right.
But with regard to other city-owned properties, we saw about 70 city-owned properties in the area. And this mayor, and along with Bill Cole at Baltimore Development Corporation, they've turned things around. And I've seen more properties offered in the last couple of years than I had seen in decades. So we're keeping our fingers crossed.
Kirby Fowler, our guest, the president of the Downtown Partnership, 410-662-8780 is our phone number here. There's been talk about charging people to use the circulator, the Charm City Circulator, which probably is the single most popular thing in all of Baltimore, would you say? I don't know. What's more popular than the free Charm City circulator?
Well, we actually
pound for pound, mile for mile. I don't know what else.
I don't know what it's what the worth is, but we did a review of a bunch of articles and rankings, and the circulator came back as one of the best uses of city-owned money, or sorry, city money,
tax dollars.
And so clearly, why change something that seems to be working well? However, on the financial side, I think there's been some expansion that has had some impact on the underlying budget of the circulator. But if you look at the purple line, which goes from Penn Station down to Cross Street, or the orange line that goes from the UMB Biopark all the way over to Harbor East and beyond.
Yeah, east side.
Those have at least 15 million riders since its inception. People are depending on the circulator to live here. People are now coming without cars. We're seeing an increase of people who are leaving their cars behind. Every car you leave behind actually saves you $8,000 per year that you can put towards other things.
We actually had an email on this subject of parking. Stephanie saying that when I first started working in Baltimore, I wanted to live in the city but ended up in the county because of the limited parking. I'm married now and living in the Patterson Park area with my husband. I love my neighborhood, by the way, but we still struggle with street parking. Any efforts to improve parking?
Well, it depends if you're talking about on street or off street.
Buy a smart car. I don't know.
Well, yeah, yeah.
I don't mean to be glib, but I mean, this comes up all the time, especially on the east side. Fells Point, yeah. Southeast Baltimore, Highlandtown, Patterson Park, we hear this a lot.
And this is why the city was visionary in adopting the circulator program. People, even if you have one car, they can now park it at one point, let's say at night, and they can actually travel from Federal Hill to Mount Vernon for dinner and not have to worry about finding a parking space when they get back.
Mm-hmm.
So people should use circulator, use Uber. As we increase the density, increase number of people, if people are going to bring cars still, it's going to be more problematic. So we need a cycle track for biking, we need better pedestrian ways, and we need more transit.
Ken in Station North for Kirby Fowler. Hi, Ken.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm a small business owner, and we actually opened our office in Station North, but we definitely looked at the downtown. And I've seen, you know, there's tons of business booming there, but they all seem to be larger businesses, these massive condominiums, big retail projects. And I was curious, when I was looking at programs for a small business, if there's anything like that for small, locally owned businesses like my own and my friends, who's also looking at opening probably in the Mount Vernon area because the downtown didn't seem too conducive for him.
Well, yes. In fact, Downtown Partnership has incentives. We adopted a program called Operation Storefront. It was a program to get retailers or artists into first floor space, and we only required them to be in for 6 months. And in most cases, we gave $10,000 grants. We gave out 14 of those, and we will continue to entertain any folks who are interested in moving into some of the first floor retail spaces. It requires, it takes two to tango. We need the property owner to also be willing to lease to one of these tenants, but we want to add more mom and pops and locally owned businesses. That adds the flavor and the character to downtown.
Kirby, we're about out of time. Are employers still offering incentives for live near where you work?
Some. I see it's tapered off a little bit. That's just my view. I think more could do so. And we're seeing less give money for transit use, I think. I think employers as a whole, I'd like to see them be a little more open-minded about transit use and other ways to incentivize, you know, leaving cars behind.
Well, thank you for being here.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, Kirby Fowler is president of the Downtown Partnership, and tomorrow he's releasing his State of the Downtown report. Actually, is it on your website already?
It will
today?
Be tomorrow.
By tomorrow. Yes. Okay, the breakfast is tomorrow. Well, thank you very much, Kirby.
Okay, thank you, Dan.
Yep, nice to have you on the show. And if any follow-up here for Kirby, questions or comments, please send it to midday@wypr.org. All right, we have to take a break here. We get the news coming up from NPR, and then the second hour of Midday. Again, the psychiatrist, Irv Yalom, the grand old man of psychiatry, a great guru of group psychotherapy, will be joining us in the second hour of our show. So I hope you'll stick around for that.